Welcome to the Vantage Point podcast. Alice, thanks so much for joining me today. I just wanted to get a feel for sort of what your life's been like over the past few years. Talk to me about your journey from graduating to your first stage performance to acting, singing, writing, all this stuff you've been doing, touring right now, I believe. Yeah, tell me how you got
Yes.
there.
There's not much in the acting scene in North Wales. I was very lucky to have very supportive parents, and I was auditioning for drama school and auditioned for about 3 years. So the first year I got into two foundation courses, which was brilliant, and I went to the GSA Foundation in Guildford, and that was so good and I learnt so much. And then auditioned again, didn't get in anywhere. Then I did Art Foundation back home in Bangor, then went to my auditions with a little sketchbook in hand, being like, this is me, this is what I do, and then managed to get into a few places. So I had the choice and I went to Rose Bruford to study actor musicianship, but they did ask me like, oh, what instruments do you play? And I'm like, oh, I play piano and glockenspiel. And then of course got a recall and then had to buy myself a glockenspiel. That was quite fun. So my second year, that's when COVID hit, which was shite. Oh, I don't know. Can we swear? Is that
Yeah,
bad?
so everyone.
It's fine. Okay, cool. So I was doing drama school training online, which is as bad as you could think it could be.
How does that even
And
work?
oh,
Or video
it was
calls?
hilarious. So we'd be doing like a Shakespeare scene like this, and there was one scene I did that's in Richard the Third. And I meant to spit at Richard the Third. And so I just went at the camera, and then the other person went on the other side, and it was like, oh God, this is not fun. When I was in third year, that's when all the agencies and casting directors are meant to come and see you. So people were quite scared still to come out and to mingle and things. So then there was a second lockdown, and that's when I actually got my agent, because I sent out my show reel, and I'm with McFarlane Shard Associates with John, which is just, he's honestly the perfect agent that I wanted. I was getting auditions and auditions, mostly no's. You train yourself your whole life for all these no's, but you don't even get no's. You just get silence, which I think
Right.
sometimes is worse.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Essentially you get ghosted by casting directors and things like that. You're just like, oh, okay, well, I didn't get the job. And you just find out weeks later when the casting is up, or you watch a TV show that you were meant to be in and you go, oh, I remember that scene. And then I auditioned for Frankenstein. I was one of the youngest people auditioning for it, and it was because somebody who'd come to Rose Bruford to teach, he spotted me and he was like, oh, you're really, really good. He came to see a musical that I wrote and said it was really brilliant, and told this guy who they were sharing a dressing room, and he was flipping through all the headshots, and then he goes, oh, that girl, Alice, she was in Rose Bruford. I know she's young and she's got nothing on her CV, but please get her in the room because she's really good.
Which was the
So
role in Frankenstein?
it was to play Elizabeth Lavenza, which is the main female part. And in the show that we're doing a bit of multi-rolling as well, with Black Eyed Theatre. So it was a guy playing Frankenstein, guy playing the creature, two other guys who were playing all the other roles, and then there was me. I was playing all the female parts and puppeteering the puppet, because we had a massive 6 foot 3 puppet for the creature. And it
Oh,
was
wow.
so amazing. And to learn such a new skill soon after drama school, it was really, really, really fun to do. And I love puppeteering. I've always loved it.
That must take a bit of coordination, right? Because you might have an idea in your head of how you want it to act, but if your coordination isn't right and if you've not fully mastered how to use this puppet, it could look totally different to how it looks in your head, right?
It's kind of crazy. Like in the audition, we got to handle the puppet. And so I was straight on the feet. So you're just on your knees. You figure out how to lift it. These muscles here, oh my God, these are my strongest muscles because of doing that, and because I've done other puppeteering as well now. So it was three people manning this puppet, which means the technical term is a bunraku puppet. So I was on the feet. I had two very tall men, one standing on top of me, hooked into the puppet. He was on one arm, and then another very tall man on the head and on the other puppet, the other arm. And then we just sort of had to breathe together and be very much in tune to what we were doing.
I remember back in the day, you dressing as Disney princesses, going to like kids' birthday parties and stuff. You know, it sounds like you've come quite a long way since then. Tell me a bit about what you're doing right now then. Oh, What a Lovely War. What's that all about? How did you get involved in that?
So, Oh, What a Lovely War is done by the same company as Frankenstein. I'd auditioned for another thing for them, and they were like, oh, "You like, we really want you, but you're just, we went slightly different direction." I was like, "Okay, but it's lovely to be auditioned again for the same company." And then I get a message from the producer, and he's like, "I really want you to audition for Oh, What a Lovely War." I was like, "Oh, exciting! It's quite nice to have like a little." Invite. A couple of months later, I find out that one of my good friends, who's a director, is directing it. And then I was like, oh, okay. And so when I went into the audition room, it was just like greeting old friends. It was lovely. I still had to go through exactly the same process as everybody else. But luckily, on my first day of rehearsals for another job, I found out that I'd got this one. It's a
Wow.
9-month tour. So it's really, really, really long. It's six people, like I'm playing nine instruments in it. We do all the movement, all the dance, all of the singing, and all of the several different characters. We're putting on like different hats or just different pieces of costume and turning into somebody else.
So you spend half the time changing, right?
Oh yeah, honestly, but we do it in front of the audience, so
Oh,
they
fair
get
enough.
tickets. Yeah, they get another show.
How many instruments can you play?
Oh goodness. I play piano. Piano is my main instrument. Obviously, picked up the glockenspiel. There's a ukulele, accordion, a little bit of guitar, a little bit of violin, most like percussion, just so I just get handed a different piece of percussion. Penny whistle now. What else do I play? We use the kazoo in the show, but I don't count that as one of my main instruments. Oh, I play the saw, which I picked up for Frankenstein, actually. That was really, really
The
fun.
what? What's
The
that?
saw, as in like a saw that you go
Like a
you
saw
saw
that you
things.
cut wood with. That's
yeah
an instrument. How's that an
yeah you
instrument?
could. So you I just bought like a random saw off Amazon. You hold it between your legs and you bend it, so it's like an S curve, which is it's like a sound wave, and then you use a bow from a violin or preferably like a bass or something because it's thicker. You draw along it and it makes this weird wailing sound. It's honestly,
I've
Google it. It's
never
so
heard of
good.
that. That's
No, I'm
amazing.
not that good at it, but you just change the pitch. And for Frankenstein, that was great because it was just like weird waily sounds in the background.
I know what you mean, like those sort of high-pitched, like horror sounds, right?
Yeah, and we tried to do like a horror soundscape on stage for that. But yeah, we have enough
Wow.
horror in the subject matter with Oh, What a Lovely War is all based on World War One.
What kind of
Yeah.
role do you have in that then?
We've set it in a circus, so we all have like circus roles. There's two clowns, there's a gymnast, there's a strong man and a ringmaster, and I'm a trapeze artist. We come on stage and we are these people and we're interacting with all the audience. I'm very flirty, so I'm flirting with all of the audience. They all get very excited and be like, oh yes, and get them on our side before we even start the show. But it's very Brechtian. I don't know if you studied any drama things, but the Brecht is very much sort of, hey, this is a show and you're here to watch a show and we know that there's an
Like very
audience there.
self-aware.
Yeah, it's very self-aware, it's very meta. So it's like,
Right.
hey, this is what this is. And then when we're changing into characters, everybody knows that you're still this sort of trapeze artist underneath. Sometimes I take off the hat and you're just very and I go back to sort of my base character and then come back and do other things. It's a manic show. I have barely any time to breathe in it, let alone do anything else.
It must be exhausting being up there, like constantly having to be at maximum energy the whole time. Because I've seen actors talk about what it's like being on stage, how you have to sort of oversell everything, overact everything. Like that must be draining, right?
It's a lot, especially when you're doing a piece like this, because it's not naturalism. It's very much warped realism. So you're being a little bit grotesque or a little bit strange. Like voices I have to do are just very, very much from very girly, very like pointed and things to being like quite rough and being just like a soldier in the trenches. It's like from one extreme to the other, really.
Just because I have to ask this, and I think this will be great on the audio. Could you do an example of, say, one of your super female actor voices, and then an example of one of your like soldier voices, maybe perhaps a
Yeah.
line from the show?
if I'm more feminine, then I'm just more like this. And then I'm, oh, and hello, oh, darlings, welcome. It's so lovely to have you here. Have you a man digging your garden when he should be digging trenches like that? And there was one scene that got cut, and we loved him. We loved him so much, but I was drawing too much attention, and he was he was this old, horrible man. And there was one thing he said, and it was just, hello, ponies. It was so funny. But yeah, it's really hard to do that voice like loud as well. I've done a lot of different audio series and things. I played like a little Welsh penguin, like a little blind dormouse. That helped as well, being able to change my voice a lot.
How does voice acting role compare to, say, like a regular traditional acting role? How do you prepare differently for those? Is there more of a challenge in different ways in preparing for a voice acting role compared to when you're on stage or in a film? What's the differences there?
Voice acting, you don't tend to need to learn the script before, which is one big difference.
Of course, you can just read. You can just read it, right?
Yeah. The other thing is that you're not interacting with anyone. Sometimes you'll have somebody else's voice that they've recorded, but most of the time it's just you reading the lines and then reacting to how you think they would say the line. It's one moment, and that's what's been captured, and that's what people will listen to again and again. Whereas you come to a theatre production and it can be so wildly different from night to night. Like, it's always the same material and the same things, but things go wrong. It's live theatre, and sometimes that's the best thing. Like, people fall over. I fell down some stairs. Luckily, it was just after act one and we have to just reset all of the props. And I walked up some stairs and then literally decked it in front of everybody. And sometimes you laugh on stage, which is really funny. It's called corpsing, so because you're essentially dying on stage. And I have this moment when I'm on a penny whistle and my friend Chi, who's in the show, she's amazing. There's a gap in the set, and then she just poked her face through to make me giggle. But there is no hiding when you're doing like a little blowing instrument, and so I just started going, and I couldn't stop laughing. And then the noise was making me laugh more. I could feel people's eyes on me on stage. I was like, no, I can't. I was luckily facing the back, but oh, that killed me.
It must be quite fun just coming up with stuff on the fly, like when stuff does go wrong, you know, freestyling it a little bit. What are some ways that you mentally and physically prepare yourself when you're about to take on acting as a particular character? How do you get in the sort of mindset and the mode to embody that character and make it convincing?
I find a character on the page, and then you just go, okay, what can I do to make this true to me? How do I make it funny? How do I make it different from all of the other characters I've played? I tend to go towards voice first and think, oh, what type of voice are they? What accent would they have? What things like that? And then sort of find that in my voice. And then I find it in my body, essentially for like the old man part that I just say. So I was like, so it's very down here, we've got to do this. And then you feel very posh and you have to do that type of voice. And then you're like, what body would go with that? And so I sort of made him quite like hunched over with like a stick, and then he's just hobbling and always has like a shake in his leg. This is like to the extreme. When you're in that body and when you're doing that, you kind of find different choices. One of my choices was that character was obsessed with Chi, who's the other female character, and she was beautifully playing the violin. And so he went, oh, I quite fancy her, and then going over to her and trying to flirt with her. But it's like disgusting. It's like when a horrible old man comes up to you. And I just wanted to give that vibe from a woman doing it. It's just quite funny to see on stage.
You just discover Roshi vibes.
yeah. And you get to discover things on stage and how the audience reacts, and you go, oh, they didn't like that. Okay, I'm going to try something different tomorrow, or just like slightly altering it. But even sometimes you say the same line exactly the same way and one audience will pee themselves laughing at it, and then the other one's just like silence. It just depends on the night. It just depends on the audience. It depends how cold the auditorium is.
I'm trying to look at this from like a personal training perspective. So like, if I was thinking about this as someone who knows nothing about, you know, theatre and what actually goes into it, I'd be thinking, right, I've got to repeat this, you know, 10 times. If I want to embody an old man, I've got to practice walking around like that. Or say I'm trying to be the hero of the story, I've got to get in sort of physical shape to believably portray that.
We have this little phrase that rehearsal is, in French, is repetition, doing things again and again and again. You have to practice it and you have to do it, especially when you're going from one character to another. That's one of the hard things, because you're finding your track, and then you go, okay, so at this point I need to be like this, and at this point I need to be in a different way, but always keeping this base level. We always do a warm-up before the show. We do a physical warm-up just to feel in our bodies, and I do a bit of dancing in the show. There's one point where I'm doing a little bit of a sort of Charleston-esque bit, and I have to just warm up my legs to do that. It's quite physical. And then we do a vocal warm-up, going from like the bass of your voice to the high. And I guess it's kind of similar with training and things like that, because you have to start going, okay, and just easily starting on my muscles, and then you can go up to like the big notes and belting. You have to have that foundation there, otherwise you'll go on stage and you'll crack, or you'll hurt your voice. It's very easy to hurt your instrument, which is your body, because you haven't warmed up properly.
It'd be so easy to pull a muscle and just ruin it. You know, you're supposed to be doing, say, 10 weeks of the show, and you pull a muscle or damage your voice in the first week, and you're stuffed then for the rest of it, aren't you?
I found out that I have like a fused part of my spine, because I was like getting a really, really bad back, and then randomly went to a chiropractor in Winchester, and then he had an x-ray machine. He was like, I really want to x-ray your back, because you're too young to be experiencing this. And I was like, oh, okay, I've got something medically wrong with me. But he's given me like exercises to do, so I've been doing them before the show as well, because I lost a lot of core strength because I had surgery earlier this year. I had to build myself up as well. That's why my back hurts more, because I've lost all my core strength that was supporting it, because now I'm back to full health. I can start working on my core again. And yeah, I had to retrain my core, because it's so good for your voice as well. Yeah, that was really hard, because I love singing too much, to the point that I'm singing just all the time. And when you can't do that, it really throws you off as a person. So yeah,
I bet. Yeah, that must have been tough. People come to me and they say, my lower back hurts, so I can't do certain types of core training. But the best thing you can do for your lower back and for your back in general is to train your core. If it hurts, find a way around it. You don't want to lose the ability to protect your spine by using your core. You know, that's a function of your core, is to protect your spine. So yeah, it's great. It sounds great what you've done there. As soon as you could, you got back on it and you got that core strength back, and that'll be great for you going forward. What are some of the other hurdles you've had in your sort of journey so far? Like, has there ever been anything else that's like affected your voice, or, you know, you've got on stage and had stage fright? Do you ever get that?
I've not had stage fright in a very long time. There's a few times I've got nervous, and that was for opening night, when I get thrown loads of different things beforehand. I got a bit nervous for press night, because I'd never had a press night before, which is when loads of reviewers come in and review you and what you're doing.
Right.
And you're just like, oh God, what are they going to say? But luckily went fairly well, and I've had really, really lovely responses. The surgery earlier this year, that was very difficult, because it was a big emergency thing, and had surgery on my abdomen, and that was very scary. And also getting over the mental thing for that as well. You just have to do that. I think a lot of actors struggle a lot with their mental health, because I wasn't in work for about 14 months, like in acting work. People just think, I'm never going to act again, I'm never going to get a show again. But you just have to have this self-belief. And you get another role, you get another two roles, and then you're like, oh, okay, I can do this. The belief that you are good enough. And people say, oh, are you a working actor? Or you're not really an actor, you're a barista or whatever like that. And it's like, no. If a doctor was working in Costa, you'd be like, well, yeah, I'm a doctor, but I'm just working in Costa at the moment. Well, it's not exactly the same thing. But all actors, until we go, okay, no, I don't want to do that.
It sounds to me like that's your Jaime Lannister moment. I don't suppose you watched Game of Thrones back in the day. He's the greatest swordsman in the land, right? And he loses his hand. You see him go from cocky and brash to relearning who he is, because he's lost the thing that made him who he thought he was. I imagine you go through a bit of that when you lose the skill that you have. For example, if you have an abdomen surgery, it affects your singing and your ability to perform. It makes you really reevaluate, who am I? And then, you know, you manage to get yourself back there. For some people, they would just give into that. So fair play for getting through that. We've not got long left, so I just want to wrap it up with just a couple really light questions. So movies, what kind of stuff do you watch? What inspires you? Any actors that you take inspiration from?
So actors, Jodie Comer. I love Jodie Comer. Judi Dench for my Shakespeare. David Tennant. I love David Tennant. I also got to meet him by accident. Oh, it was so exciting. So lovely to meet him. I was like, oh my God, I had to try and be cool. I had a birthday recently and I held a party that was full of 26 of my favorite movies because I can't make a proper choice, but horror, Hereditary, for the one that I just love to put on and cry to is Bridget Jones's Diary. I'm a big Harry Potter fan, so anything Harry Potter, Rocky Horror Picture Show, and Little Shop of Horrors are two of my favorite musical films. One of my most hated favorite films is Downsizing. People hate it, but I love it, and I think it's going to be a cult classic. But everybody's just like, no, Alice, it's
Is it Matt Damon in that?
yeah, and
Yeah,
they
okay,
all
yeah.
get shrunk down.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailers for that and thinking, oh, that looks interesting when it came out. And then I just never heard anything about it since. So yeah, I might have to go back and give that one a watch. We've got a couple minutes left, so I'd like to actually just one final message to our listeners, right? You know, for maybe an upcoming actor who's maybe not too far off where you're at right now, you know, maybe you a couple years ago, what would you say to someone in your shoes chasing opportunity? What bit of advice
Yeah.
would you give to them?
Never stop believing in yourself and that you are good. You can do this. It's a hard thing to do, but believe in yourself. You'll get far.
Fair play. Yeah, I think that's a message that we can apply that to pretty much anything. So, yeah,
Yeah.
awesome. Alice, thanks so much for joining me today on Vantage Point Podcast.
It's been lovely to speak to you.